SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, on the app, etc., and at our website too, stevebick.com. A damp morning did not go to the track given the weather situation and also really with the lineup and with Del Mar opening day. And a few other things that are transpiring that we'll address. It didn't make much sense. There wasn't going to be anything added by being over at the track. So we'll save it for next week because, of course, tomorrow and Friday we'll come to you from Monmouth Park, Oceanport, Fast Times on the Jersey Shore, all of that for Haskell Day. And I guess we could fold this in immediately. We got a damp morning. The weather, the rain has stopped, but some thunderstorms probably this afternoon. We'll see how it plays. NYRA is holding the MTOs, and there's a lot of them should decisions be made later to take anything off the grass. There's a good number of MTOs, particularly in the 6th and the 7th. It looks like the early part of the card should be all right. But mid-afternoon, they're talking some thunderstorms. And then, notably, for the weekend, concerns starting to mount about extreme temperatures, about heat. And Tina and I are headed down to the shore, and they're talking, mid-90s there. And then I was shocked when I was asked this morning about Saratoga, and I certainly didn't expect Saratoga to have a forecast for higher temperatures than Oceanport. At the same time, you do get the breeze, but they're talking 97 degrees on Saturday in the Saratoga area. So there'll be some monitoring regarding temperature, and 95, so really not much of a difference, Oceanport up to the spa. So we'll watch for that. The heat index and all of that stuff. And we'll get, as we get closer, we'll see what the decision process, how it's shaping up. Meanwhile, today, Del Mar kicks off their summer, and certainly the Southern California racing interests, stakeholders, connections, horse players, I think everybody just delighted to get going at Del Mar. We'll talk to Jay Pridman first this morning, and later we'll touch base with Hammer, Gary Young. We'll have plenty of Del Mar discussion. I also am going to touch base with Oscar De La Torre, who we talked to, of course, ahead of the Backstretch employees rally at Santa Anita, and going to get an update from Oscar. He's got a couple of things to discuss about the Del Mar and down by San Luis Rey. So Oscar will slip in, and we've had a couple of I think important discussions already this week between Michael Dickinson yesterday, and that was really well received, as was Doug O'Neill's visit on Monday. And Doug and I talked yesterday, and he asked if there was room for Oscar, and certainly there is. So Del Mar, about half or more of this morning's discussion. Eric Johnson is going to join us as well. And Eric, of course, become an active and eager and fairly gleeful part of the ownership ranks, and NHL star, and he loves coming to the racetrack. Saratoga last week, of course, in on the Schuylerville winner and part of the celebration. And now he's turning his attention to some horses that he's going to be involved with at Del Mar. And then, you know, because the hockey season these days is about 10 and a half months, it seems. Right? He's probably getting ready to go back to training camp, too. So Eric Johnson, looking forward to it. And Seth Merrow later as well. There's also Bill Gallo for the jump scene as the National Steeplechase Association kicks off their calendar here at Saratoga today in the first. 12:50, the post. This is more or less a non-winners of two, but some fairly experienced horses and a good group of eight. And we'll see if there's any changes. We'll catch up with Bill Gallo and we'll kick off the Spa Hopper season. We're also going to talk to Marcus Hirsch and not Arlington, not Fairgrounds, anything like that. Well, Fairgrounds related. The news came late yesterday afternoon that Bob Fortas had passed. And it's a tragic and really unfair scenario that took Bob. And Marcus will, you know, talk about working with him and becoming friendly with him. I expect that Gary West, one of his closest friends, co-wrote the wonderful jock book that Fortas obsessed over. You heard Bob on the show many times as the book was being prepared and as the various elements of its composition, you know, it changed as he approached it. But his career as a turf rider, just an exemplary journalist with exacting standards and the type that would pore over his writing and wordsmith. And you might recall the conversations we had that, and I'm sure Gary West will reflect on it. You know how often he was going back and back and back and you know, as he wrote chapter after chapter and he created the book more or less about every moment in a jockey's day, or, you know, in all the parts that the working parts of the jockey experience, the preparation and then the actual race running and, you know, just everything that went into it. And Gary West edited it for him. And I could just remember, you know, how Bob kept talking, you know, it's getting closer. I just want to fix this. I want to fix that. And, you know, he would send chapters and sections and we would talk about them. And then, of course, the book has raised money for the PDJF, Ride to Win, by the way, the title, an inside look at the jockey's craft. And it's so worth your interest, and I'm sure many of you have it, you know, given how often we discuss the book. And I didn't get to see Bob on this last trip down. You know, he had surgery a couple of years ago that took a tumor from his spine, and it caused some infirmity, and it you know, it was tough. It was, you know, it was a health issue, certainly, but what really, you know, hastened his passing was being hit by a car this spring, and it took the after effect is what took Bob Fortas from everybody, and you know, his high standards and his dedication. He was one of those guys. I'm sure tomorrow Steve Haskin will talk about him as well. He's one of those guys. Gary West had a great quote, you know, saying any number of times he would wake up, you know, maybe covering Derby or whatever, you know, any time you were going to be out at the racetrack and covering something with Bob Fortas, you'd wake up and you'd want to roll over and maybe sleep another hour, but then you'd realize Bob's going to be out there. I better get out there. He had a very interesting way about him too. I mean, he was someone that at first glance seemed a little, you know, a little gruff, but he wasn't at all. The exact opposite, actually, and once you got to know him, it was really a pleasure and very, very thoughtful. You know, he held a doctorate and University of Michigan. He was a track runner and a distance runner. And it occurs to me that Tim Layden probably would be somebody that was friendly and got to know Bob Fortas. But it's been a very difficult few months down in New Orleans. They've lost some real icons. I'll let Marcus rip on that, I suppose, when he joins us later in the hour. So, deepest sympathy to his longtime companion, Cherish, and I mean all of us that. Anybody that knew him in person or knew him through his work will miss him and appreciate, you know, what he brought to turf riding. He absolutely was in awe of the equine athlete and, you know, celebrated them constantly. Bob Fortas, very, very unfair to be taken. 69 years old. So you'll hear in the next couple of days, you'll hear more about him. And certainly anybody that was a Times-Picayune reader, I'm sure when I talk to Al Stahl and Tom Amos, certainly Tom Amos, who, you know, whose brother on the Times-Picayune staff as an editor. So I'm really saddened by it. Simultaneously, we're excited about getting Del Mar started. Of course, the Oceanside today and a fairly, you know, fairly typical Del Mar card to start the season. Some nice sized fields too, and David Jerkins will do, I'm sure, everything he can. He'll pull every possible rabbit out of hats to keep these fields full. And in addition to the feature, the Oceanside will go off as the eighth race, 12 horse field. John Sadler with the favorite, Jessican, the Irish bred. And a couple other names in here that It's actually, usually when we get to this race, you're familiar with a lot of the three-year-olds. This is a little bit more obscure, and there's a couple of jump-up candidates in here today in the Oceanside. It'll go as the eighth, so the late pick three. The late pick four starts with a maiden special for Calbreds, 10-horse field. First level allowance as the ninth, and then it ends with another maiden special weight. The Calbreds on the front end of the pick four are two-year-olds. The older horses, three and ups, going a mile on the turf to close out the card. And pick six starts with a turf sprint, five furlong turf sprint. Some smaller fields on the front half of the card. But overall, pretty good. And Thursday as well. Got a look at it. And as we hinted with Doug O'Neill, right? So the we'll get started with Jay Pribman. Now, Jay Pribman, as I said, no break, and I will go right because there's too much to do this morning, and I'm just hearing from Bill Gallo. We'll get to Bill close to 11 this morning. I wasn't sure about you. Usually they meet with the jocks going into the jump race, so I wasn't sure what time he was going to meet. So we'll talk to Bill around 11. The Saratoga card, without talking about the details and worrying about the wet, potentially wet weather, I'll mention the feature and another sad element today, the Rick Violette, the renamed Rockville Center, the New York Breds today, six furlongs, five-horse field, and it's a competitive five-horse field, but Rick Violette, you'll see if you're watching today, will be honored. Undoubtedly, and the New York THA, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and all the trainers will be out in full force to honor Rick Violette's memory. Jay Pribman joining us, and it's opening day at Del Mar, home game, and I hope you don't have any weather worries out there, do you?
We better not. Yeah. No, it's supposed to be a very nice day here. We've had typical kind of summer weather lately, Steve, and good morning, with sort of overcast skies, and then it burns off, and it's nice in the afternoon. So if that's what we get today, that'll be just perfectly fine.
Absolutely, and as we've said, really for about a week leading into this opening day, the eagerness, Jay, to get some momentum and get some normalcy. The last 3 weeks at Los Al certainly helped to an extent, but with the turf racing coming back and everything that is Del Mar, I imagine that everybody's pretty excited about this afternoon.
Yeah, you talked to the horsemen when they were arriving here, and I think you talked to horse players as well, and everybody just kind of wants hopefully a fresh start on this circuit and hit the reset button and try and move forward. It's been obviously a tumultuous first 6 months of the year on this circuit, but hopefully things will be good racing this summer, and we'll have an enjoyable meet. But there's still some pretty significant headwinds here, so it's not all roses and candy.
Well, that's certainly true. Let's get some of the hard news out of the way first before we talk about some of the things we enjoy talking about. And Jay, I find it very difficult on a daily basis when anything West Coast related comes up, and it's not even limited to West Coast, given what happened with Naira as well, the Jerry Hollendorfer situation continues to cast a shadow. And I talked to you already about it after you got back from vacation, but any further developments behind the scenes?
Well, the latest since we spoke last week is that on Monday, Hollendorfer's legal team, in conjunction with the California Thoroughbred Trainers, the organization that represents trainers out here, and that actually had a change in management since you and I spoke, with Owen Hardy taking over for Jim Cassidy following an election. They filed a suit in San Diego County Superior Court on Monday, saying that they don't believe that the protocol has been followed in an appropriate manner based on the language of the horseman's contract that is signed with Del Mar for the race season in regards to how Hollendorfer's situation has evolved. And so that means that there will be, you know, pending some sort of a resolution or a temporary restraining order. There's a lawsuit now on the books with Hollendorfer and the CTT versus Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. So that's the latest news as of now. And what was in effect and is still in effect and may continue to be in effect. It just all depends on how things play out. But the current policy is that Hollendorfer cannot run horses here. Because he is a licensed trainer, he also had to, and then the rules in California are that if you are a licensed trainer, another trainer can't run horses for you. So from a training standpoint, all horses who run at Del Mar are with Dan Ward, Hollendorfer's assistant, and any horse that Hollendorfer had an ownership in, and that's a significant number of horses because he, as we've talked about in the past, he has significant skin in the game from the standpoint of when he buys or claims horses, he often takes percentages of them. The rules are that you can't have a horse run with another trainer training it if you're also a licensed trainer as well. So all those horses had to either have their percentages sold or leased to someone if they're going to run during the Del Mar meeting. So that's where things stand as of now, and it's obviously going to continue to be an updated situation depending on what transpires with this lawsuit, which, you know, I mean, a judge could rule for Hollendorfer. He could say, no, you have no standing here, and then Del Mar's in their right. Or maybe both sides mediate things. I mean, I'm not going to speculate on what will happen. I'm just saying those are the possibilities of what can happen. And so we'll just continue to just report the facts as we know them and then go forward.
Exactly. And the CTT news was not unexpected. Last week we had mentioned that there had been a number of trainers that were unhappy with the way things were handled throughout the winter. And I appreciate the update. And Steve Anderson reported on the suit yesterday. So we'll see what the courts do. And it's, of course, grossly unfair that this ends up landing in Del Mar's lap, Jay. They did, you know, this was foisted upon them by what transpired at Arcadia. So just remarkable. The constant ripples of this Santa Anita season. Let's turn toward some of the things that are a tradition, including the Clip and Save column. The two-year-olds, nothing like two-year-olds at Del Mar. A lot of them will be the stars of tomorrow. We know a lot of the barns that these two-year-olds are, you know, typically in. Give us a taste of what's to come on the two-year-old front.
Well, I know this will shock everybody, but per usual with two-year-olds at Del Mar, the beginning point is Baffert. He's always strong to begin with. But last fall, as I wrote in the story, a couple of the principals that were involved in Justify, Starlight Racing and SF Racing, they decided they wanted to join forces, buy a couple dozen yearlings, and send them to Baffert to open a West Coast division. So the ripple effect, you're talking about a ripple effect a moment ago, the ripple effect of Justify actually is carried over now a year plus from his brief but brilliant career to have a pretty significant impact on this Del Mar meet in terms of the two-year-olds. And so that that was in addition to all the runners that he usually has. So he's just very strong, per usual. There are other barns here who have some very promising runners, just not certainly in the numbers that he has. But there were several trainers who were telling me that because the two-year-old sales were going on and some trepidation about buying then, or maybe they got them filled a little bit later when it looked like the waters were starting to calm just a little bit. So the numbers are down a little bit out here in terms of overall numbers on the circuit and on the backstretch here. But like I was saying, you know, Baffert's got a stronger hand than he even usually has. So that's, I think, going to be something to watch here as the season unfolds. Simon Callahan has some nice horses. You know, the story that I write, I try and focus on horses who haven't run yet. There's obviously horses who have run already that are very promising, including for Simon Callahan, the filly Amalfi Sunrise, who was a very impressive maiden winner at Santa Anita and is heading to the Sorrento next. And of course, she's mentioned in the story, but I try and focus more on horses that people have never heard of yet because that's just, I think, a more helpful way to do this. I'm not trying to, you know, tell you hopefully something that you already know, but I want to acknowledge those horses. But by and large, this is to say, hey, here's some horses that you might want to keep an eye on. And the other impact, Steve, just talking about what's gone on the circuit, and you were referencing Jerry Hollendorfer. You know, he had some two-year-olds that were ticketed to him that have moved to other barns. And what Ward has is he's got a couple of fillies that look like they are very promising, but their numbers are down from what that barn has had in previous years. And obviously, last year they had quite a bit of success here with Leighton, Instagram. So that, I think, could be another factor in what goes on here this season.
No doubt. And, you know, looking at, you know, just sort of scanning the piece, you know, beyond, you know, the Baffert name, and you cited Simon Callahan, who's really become, it's kind of become a reliable font, right, for baby action.
Well, he's won the debutante the last 2 years, so he's seeking his third straight. He's got a nice colt as well named Schrodinger, Justin Phillip colt, who won his debut at Los Alamitos, and he'll head to the Best Pal. And at the moment, he looks like the best colt out here who's raced. But, you know, we'll see what transpires as the meet goes on here. Obviously, this is the time of year when, similar to Saratoga, trainers out here really want to shine with their two-year-olds and make an impact. I think very similar to Saratoga, people would much rather win a race at Del Mar than anywhere else, and this is the place where you like to unveil. If a horse has been forward in their training, you want to go on with them here. You're not going to force-feed things. And Baffert was even telling me that in the case of some of his horses, some of them are going to be later in the meet or maybe not till the fall at Santa Anita. The ones who won't run until the fall at Santa Anita, I don't even include in this piece because it's just not germane to what we're trying to do in this story, which is just to look at what might transpire here over the next 7 weeks.
I'm glad you mentioned Schrodinger, the Justin Phillip. The backstory on that came up when we were at OBS March, because that's a that's a colt that Aaron Yagoda pin hooked.
Love it.
Yeah. It was a big seller. Five and change, 5.25, 550. And
we'll buy a lot of matzah.
Exactly. And in fact, Aaron's got on her way today in the ninth. Who's got, I think, got a nice shot at a price. But when you mentioned Justin Phillip, I knew that Simon Callahan was handling for Kaleem Shop. So that's exactly who that is. Jay, how about some of the offbeat horsemen? You know, there's always some pop-ups and smaller outfits that, you know, get their hands on a good baby, and you know, those are the ones that, you know, that aren't as well bet as the high profile outfits.
Yeah, I don't know. Edward used the same adjective you did, but in terms of other trainers that look like they've got some potential, you know, I don't know that I'd call these smaller or offbeat trainers, but you know, for instance, Michael McCarthy, whose barn is continuing to grow. He, in fact, just recently added Sean McCarthy, no relation, as his assistant, a very well-respected trainer out here who's moved into an assistant's role, kind of analogous to what went on with David Carroll,
sure,
who now works for Mark Cassie. And Michael McCarthy's done very well during his career with offspring of Quality Road, like City of Light and Illuminant, and he's got a few Quality Road runners, a colt and a couple of fillies that look like they could do. I know that Brian Corner's got a colt who is supposed to run this weekend, named Disco Ball, the Orb colt, who they like a lot. And over at Los Alamitos is a filly, a competitive edge filly that Mike Pipey trains, named 37 Trouts, that has been working pretty quickly over there. So those are and she's a Calbert filly. Those are a couple of ones for maybe slightly smaller barns that might be worth looking out for. Neil Drysdale actually has a couple of two-year-olds that, including a couple that he bought overseas, that are pretty forward and should run before the middle part of the meet. They're worth looking at as well. So I would just encourage everybody who you know, has access to the forum to either buy today's paper or get a subscription and read the online story and just save it for the season, because some of these horses are going to be running as soon as this weekend. Then you'll want to kind of be dialed in on that.
Absolutely. And speaking of this weekend, you know, the action right away, and that includes the prep for the Pacific Classic. When it comes to the San Diego, some ideas about some of the bigger names and some of the bigger highlights, Jay, as the summer unfolds?
Well, you've got Catalina Cruiser for the San Diego, and Sadler's, you know, had a terrific season last summer with Catalina Cruiser and Accelerate. And like we were talking last week, he looks like he's sitting on a potentially good meet as well with Catalina Cruiser, and he's got Gift Box. Disappointed a little bit, I thought, coming back on short rest in the Stephen Foster, but I think he's a better horse than that, and hopefully going out to a mile and a quarter and having a little more time between starts, we'll see his best next month in the Pacific Classic. So those, you know, that's, I think, one of the things to look forward to from an older horse standpoint. And then the Pacific Classic is obviously the highlight of the meet later on this summer. One of the things I think this could be a ripe opportunity for, if there was a decent three-year-old, to maybe take on older horses in that race. It doesn't happen very often, but they have done well over the years. In fact, the very first one was won by Best Pal when he was three. So it seems like a year where, if there was one that wasn't going to be heading to Saratoga for the Travers, take a shot in here, but we'll just have, you know, that's still weeks away. We'll see how that all unfolds.
Well, and of course,
and then the grass racing, I think, will be good. The trainers were very eager to work on the grass. They're not allowed to at Santa Anita. They try and protect the course up there because they're just there for so long. And down here, with only racing for 7 weeks, they allow grass works. And on Monday, they were were lined up like airplanes when it would have landed at JFK or LAX, and several dozen horses got out there and turned in breezes. So many of them will be running this weekend. So it's including even on Friday, one of the horses who worked really well was Toinette for Neil Drysdale, and she's in the Oceanitas. She's making her comeback in that race, as is Paved, a couple of really nice now 4-year-old fillies who were really good 3-year-olds last year, who've been off for a long time, but are both using the Oceanitas as their comeback race, and then they'll go on from there to, I'm sure, graded stake later in the meet.
Well, and speaking of 3-year-olds that have been off for a while, you updated everybody Monday, Jay, on Omaha Beach. Talk about Richard Mandela's plan and how quickly potential is for the early season 3-year-old favorite to emerge in an afternoon event.
Well, he hasn't had a work since everything happened right before the Kentucky Derby, when he had to have surgery for an entrapped epiglottis, and then the recovery from that took a little bit longer than they had originally expected. So he is back galloping at Del Mar. When I saw Richard the other morning, he said that he thought he would be back breezing probably next week, and then it'll just be how quickly he comes around as to whether or not, as to when he races. There's a 3-year-old stake towards the end of the meet here, the shared belief that might be the kind of race that would suit him, but it's all predicated on how quickly he comes around in his breezes. But I know that the intention going in right now is to get in a start before the meet's over, and then move on and try and have a big fall season. So that's where they're at. But first things first, you got to get back on a regular breeze pattern.
Absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to it, and looking forward to the summer at Del Mar, and got a couple of other things, Jay, I want to touch on, but always important, give everybody that's going to get to Del Mar maybe for the first time, give them a push or two for dining experience in and around the track.
There's so many great places. The best place to eat and also to see horsemen after the races is Pamplemousse Grill, which is right across the street from the track on Via de la Valle, which is the track that runs east-west and bisects Del Mar from Solana Beach. So that would be right at the top of the list. A little east of the track is a restaurant called Market, which is also a terrific, terrific place. There's a new steakhouse that's opened a little south of Del Mar, down in La Jolla Village, the UTC area. It's called University Town Center. There's a mall there. It's called Larson Steakhouse that I went to last week and thought was terrific. So that would be a new one to put on my list. And then more sort of casual type dining. I love a sandwich place called Board and Brew that has several. It's a local mini chain in San Diego. They've got like 6 or 7 outlets, but there's one right in downtown Del Mar. They've got great sandwiches, and there's obviously a number of terrific Mexican places, from higher end sit down kind of places to just small taco and burrito shops. I'm partial in that latter category to Roberto's, which is just up the street in Solana Beach on Pacific Coast Highway from Del Mar. So those would be a few that I'd put on the list, and of course, you can't come to Del Mar without going to the Brigantine.
Yes, so, the Brig.
You've got to get a fish taco and a beer there. And that's just sort of a rite of passage.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the pushes and some of the new, especially on the fresher and unfamiliar side of things. Let me, Jay, do two things before I ask you about Bob Fortas. Are we going to talk Friday, or do you have a Haskell, any Haskell thoughts?
I think you got plenty of other people who should get on your show later this week. I mean, the Haskell is, it's really an interesting race because Maximum Security didn't run as well as we know he can in his last start, and so there's just a question over where he's at. But I think if he runs his best race, he is the best horse in that field. And I'm just eager to see if he bounces back with his best performance. You know, King for the Day has really come on, and he's legitimately good, and beat him on the square last time. And I'll be interested in seeing if he's continuing to move forward. Mucho Gusto is heading back from out here. And Baffert's done very well in the Haskell over the years. My biggest concern with Mucho Gusto is whether going out to a mile and an eighth is going to be ideal for him. That might be stretching to the outer range of what he wants to do, but he's obviously in very sharp form right now.
Yeah, and if you have a horse that may more be a middle distance type, trying to stretch from a mile, mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth, Monmouth's not a bad place to do it.
Exactly.
And Bob's done it successfully with a couple of his Haskell winners.
No, he's had, you know, he's done very well in that race over the years. So
yeah,
always needs to be feared going back there. But that's, I mean, that's a home game for Maximum Security. He's been based there. He's trained there. I really think that I'm really eager to see how he does this weekend, because I just think he's the best of that group when he's at his best.
Well, and of course we've got the Jim Dandy to follow for the Saratoga based, and things really starting to get down to the serious portion of the three-year-old year. Jay, before we go, Marcus Hirsch, your colleague, standing by, and I wanted to give you a chance to say something about Bob Fortas. Certainly, you know, all of us that ever had a chance to share the press boxes with him, just so greatly saddened, and readers everywhere will miss him horribly.
Yeah, it was really just hard to hear, because, I mean, Bob and Marcus and Gary West, who were probably two of his closest friends in the media, racing media, can speak with far more detail about, you know, what a wonderful person Bob is. But it's hard to use it in past tense. What I liked most about Bob was, I mean, he was just it was a very kind guy. He was extremely witty, extremely intelligent. But he loved the job. He was an old school newspaper guy who he lived walking distance from fairgrounds in the neighborhood there, and was on the backside every morning when he worked for the Times-Picayune. He had great respect among trainers and covered the sport there. You know, just going back to the Risen Star days, with just great detail and great passion. I mean, he just absolutely loved it. He loved to play the horses. He wasn't a big bettor, but he liked playing. And he liked covering the sport. And he was just fun to be around. He just was very witty. Whenever he'd see me, like, one of the first things he'd say is, "How are the Kings back-checking these days?" Just like silly stuff like that. He was always a really healthy guy in terms of how he ate. He would run, and to see what happened to him from a health standpoint over the last few years was just so grossly unfair, and the way he handled things. And he still, even this past season, when I went to the Louisiana Derby, I was fortunate enough to be able to see him, because he, even in his condition when he was recovering from, he'd had surgery for cancer near his spine, but he would still walk to the track and hang out in the horseman's lounge. And it was just great to visit with him. And it wasn't long. I mean, it was within a day or two of when I saw him. He gets hit by a car crossing the street, and just everything regretfully cascaded from that. He never really recovered from it, from that situation. It's just so awful, because he was just a really good person and really witty. And whenever he went to New Orleans, he was the face of New Orleans racing journalism for three decades. And it was just really a gut punch to find out, just the other day, that how bad off he was that he wasn't getting better, and then to get the news yesterday of his passing was just like, oh, man, it was just really tough to take. But I'm glad you're going to get, you know, Marcus right now. We'll speak. They were very, very close, and you know, from because of Marcus covering the beat for us down there in person on a daily basis for a number of years, and then even on a regular basis after he and his family had to relocate to Chicago, but still covering it and being down there quite often, and they would speak often anyway. But hope he can tell you a lot more and a lot better than I will. But it was just, you know, he's just. Between him and, you know, Ronnie Virgits, who was a great New Orleans journalism character who passed recently, it's just been a real, really sad time in that part of the country from a racing journalism standpoint.
No doubt. Jay, I appreciate it. We'll talk next week. Enjoy the Del Mar opening. Always a special day in the sport. And thank you.
Thank you, Steve, very much.
DRF Privman, everybody, and Del Mar home game for Jay. Marcus Hirsch listening in and joining us now. And as Jay referenced, Marcus and Gary West, who we've reached out to as well, and we'll have Gary the next day or two talk about Bob Fortas. But so sorry, Marcus. This is just, as Jay said, it's just unbelievably unfair.
Well, thanks for the condolences, Steve. Things have been pretty bad, to not show, in case people wonder, because Bob was not an old man. I actually don't know exactly how old he was. Maybe six. He was 60-something, closer to 60 than 70. But he took great care of himself. He was a runner. He was a Division One runner. He ran cross country and track at University of Michigan. He was very talented. And a few years ago, he started to have some just health issues. I noticed, and it was discovered he had this large benign tumor in his lower back that was causing all sorts of problems. And that wasn't an easy thing. It had to be removed, and his health was compromised. But he was doing pretty well. And I thought, you know, making steady progress, I saw him having a pretty high quality of life in the end. And he was walking back. He couldn't walk for a long time, but he was using a walker this past year. And he would go, we'd get a ride over to fairgrounds, because he lived right around the corner from the track that he covered for years and years, like 3 blocks away. He would sit in the horseman's lounge where he was welcomed, and he loved to gamble. He would watch the races and talk to people and gamble. But he started walking home, and he was walking home, I believe, the day before the Louisiana Derby this year, and he was struck by a car right next to his house. It was a pretty catastrophic injury. And he never really recovered from that. He had bleeding on the brain. I mean, the broken bones were going to mend, but in the end, he had complications from that this week. And just like that, you know, he died yesterday morning. His girlfriend called me, and it was rough. It was a rough day yesterday.
He was so much fun, as Jay referenced. He was fun to be around. He wasn't, at first glance, Marcus, he didn't seem approachable. I can remember, you know, starting to get to know him, right? I mean, he had a gruff-looking exterior, but that was completely, you know, just his look. Weren't... Right, I mean, he wasn't
a self-described curmudgeon.
Yes, definitely. That's perfect. Perfect. Kind of rumpled, constantly rumpled.
He could be unapproachable. I mean, he did not suffer fools very kindly, and he could be pretty curt to people he didn't think deserved, you know, a lot of attention. I mean, he didn't have a lot of soft edges to him, but that was part of his appeal to me. And in the end, if you did get to know him, I think at heart he was a very good person. He took ethical behavior in his job, in racing, and in life generally very seriously, and consciously. So, I mean, whatever sort of emotive attributes one doesn't have, if that is something that you attempt to do and succeed to do to a certain extent, then I think that you've probably led a pretty good life.
His nature and I think his exacting kind of standards were on full display as he wrote the book, A Ride to Win, and, you know, with his entry mate, Gary West, editing as they went, and that was the funniest project ever, Marcus. I because we pretty much, we must have had, I don't know, a half a dozen visits between the two of them, you know, talking about the book, and because the whole focus of the book changed as Bob approached it. He realized there was a story to tell about, you know, the day of a jock's existence. And he ended up, you know, creating, you know, the sort of the timeline of a jock's day in Ride to Win. And, you know, weaved together dozens and dozens of rider interviews, and you know, so he was telling their story as well as telling, you know, the highly detailed look at the craft. And the book is I mean, I read it when it came out years ago now, now it's probably 5-6 years ago, but he took great pride in, you know, in the way it came together.
Well, the ironic thing is about that book project, which will, you know, make sure among his many reporting projects, make sure he has a place in racing history, at least as long as we keep the records in the last few decades alive. But the ironic thing is that as a handicapper and bettor, and those two of the main things that he did in racing, he had no use for jockey considerations. He did not care who was riding the horses, not at all, zero. His theory was that his theory, as he expounded it to me, was every jockey ends up in the colony they're at because that's where they fit. And so they're sometimes going to get on live mounts, and when they do, unless, you know, they have bad luck, make bad decisions, which happens to everyone all the time, they're going to be competent enough to win the race. So why should I even think about it? And I think there's a lot of merit to that. I mean, because he had other ways of looking at races, and that just was not something that needed to complicate. But anyway, that the largest reporting project ever did ended up being jockeys. It's not like jockeys or respect jockeys, because he definitely did, and he got close to. I mean, I know he had pretty close relationships and knew a lot of jockeys really well. Like, I know Richard McLeary, you know, made a little mention on Twitter about his, you know, his being sorry about hearing about Bob. And Bob had told me, you know, years and years ago when Richard was a young rider and he met him at Saratoga, you know, they were been very close to Richard from Louisiana over the years. Because he was a Louisiana turf rider, and that was his domain. He covered it for a really long time for the New Orleans Times Picayune. And went to all the Triple Crown races year after year, all the Breeders' Cups. Used to go to other big races, too, when newspapers sent the reporters to cover things that were meaningful in the racing world. I mean, those days are long. These other horses were raised. Has been good friends for a long time with Louis Rousseau, the owner and trainer of Risen Star. He was along for that whole ride. I think that was one of the most exciting points in his career. And worth pointing out that this career as a writer about racing and a handicapper was completely different. From college, had a degree in math, and he was working as a statistics professor at Tulane University. Right. And he's like, I don't want to do this. And he went and got a job at the New Orleans Times Picayune because he wanted to get into racing. He had to do a lot of other stuff, too. And even while he was the turf writer and covering racing, he worked on the copy desk for years and years. He was one of their most important copy editors. I know that he taught a lot of people on the desk a lot about writing sports, any kind of sports. And Bob was not, he was not a features writer kind of writer. He was a nuts and bolts writer, and he's excellent at that. And it's important in any kind of journalistic environment to first learn how to say things clearly and concisely, and to get rid of all the chaff and to get rid of all your pretension. And Bob, that's how Bob wrote, and that's how he taught other people to work. And whatever people's styles ended up being, figuring that out first, I think, is essential. And that was what he was best at. He was best at talking to everybody, making sure that he had all sides of a story, that he understood from multiple perspectives what was happening at the center of the story, and then expressing it in simple, clear, understandable language that any reader could pick up and appreciate.
Well, nicely put, and I'm glad you talked about his mathematics and statistics background. Because it's funny that somebody, and we talk about this all the time in general terms about the kinds of people that are attracted to the game, Marcus, that that have, whether it's people coming from Wall Street, that have the puzzle solving skills or have a mathematic inclination. And it's so funny because what's more inexact than the game, than this sport, where you can take all the numbers, you can distill them all you want, and then the gates open and it's mayhem.
Yeah. I mean, Bob was kind of the perfect person for that because of the bent of his mind, and he loved athletic competitions of all sorts. I mean, that's what it was for him. He enjoyed seeing the horses as athletes. And as a person who ran races, seeing who was fastest was what it was all about. I mean, I have to mention, having this opportunity that, wasn't a notorious gambler. I mean, he came of age way before contests and stuff like that. But I've been around a lot of people betting on horses, and Bob was the best bettor I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anyone who could take a little bit of money. He never played, he never made big bets, but I've never seen someone who could make small bets into big money consistently. I really think that if he had spent some time, and he didn't want the psychological and the pressure, but he could have made a living betting horses any day, because, I mean, just an amazingly consistent winner. And really, He loved racing. He loved challenge handicapping, and he practiced it, and he got really good at it. He had a lot of attributes that you would like to see more of around horse racing, and it's unfortunate that he won't be a part of it anymore, and there probably aren't going to be too many people like him, again in the future.
Well, I mentioned, Marcus, what a bad, just gosh, 90 days, give or take, in New Orleans in terms of losing Bob, losing Ronnie Vergetz, Dookie Chase. I mean, there's a number of real institutions in the town here in the last 2-3 months.
Unfortunately. The longer you stay, the more things you see go. So, this was a tough one for me personally, and I hope that people who knew him, people who barely knew him, people who might not even have known him, can appreciate somebody's life in general when you don't aren't part of that in general, but appreciate his place in horse racing, because he meant something to it, and it meant a lot to him.
Wow, very nice. And Marcus, I know not easy, but I greatly appreciate it. And I know listeners do, and I imagine that all of us, from a Turf Writers standpoint, the Turf Writers and broadcasters, that there'll be an appropriate tribute, probably.
I hope
Breeders'
so.
Cup.
And it is easy for me to talk about Bob. And Steve, I really want to thank you for giving me the chance to. It's good to have a platform to never want to. Sadness is sadness, and grief is grief, but I think it's great that opportunity to just let people know about the whole situation.
No, not at all. It's one of the important obligations of the show, and from every standpoint, from the horsemen, the horses. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Sea Hero passing as well, and you know, it everybody that contributes to the game at large, and the passion that that Bob brought to it enriched everybody's life that, you know, that was interested and read him and knew him at all, and racing better for Bob Fortas's attention, no doubt about that. Marcus, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's take a break. It's 10 o'clock, an hour in, and we've got a very full 2 hours yet to come, including a visit with Eric Johnson. And Eric is one of those professional athletes that is just intrigued, is smitten, the racing bug, as it were, and he's involved in ownership. He loves coming to the racetrack. If only... You know, if only 7.5-8 months worth of hockey didn't get in the way, I think he'd be at the track all the time. Eric Johnson joins us next at the races, Sirius XM. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Taking you inside the sport of kings, it's At the Races on Sirius Sports. Here's your host, Steve Bick.
Where the turf meets the surf, down at Old El Mar. Take a plane, take a train, take a car. There's a smile on every face, and a winner in each race. Where the turf meets the surf at Del Mar.
There it is, the first rendering of where the turf meets the surf. their Bingo Hoffer. And I'm sure there's a few other people out there that'll be at Del Mar today that were able to take in opening day Thursday at Saratoga and get out to San Diego and get to Del Mar today. Eric Johnson, one of them. And, of course, opening day success at Saratoga with Comical. We talked to Doug O'Neill on Monday, and an absolute pleasure to get Eric Johnson on here on Del Mar opening day morning. And you're out there ready for another big couple of days of racing. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it was a fun week. Like you mentioned, we were at Saratoga and then came out here for Del Mar a couple of days ago. And it's like, feels like Christmas Eve, you know what I mean? Coming out to Del Mar, it's a lot of fun. So we're excited for sure.
Well, and you certainly started the summer with a bang. I mean, to win the Schuylerville with Comical, and you know, Doug and I, you know, talked about her win and about, you know, this smashing start of her career. And you're going to have plenty of action these next few days. But let's get some backstory in first. When did you get interested in the game?
Probably like 3 or 4 years ago, Steve. I've kind of always been interested in horse racing. I grew up in Minnesota, just probably 5 or 6 miles from Canterbury Park, and I wasn't an active, you know, racetrack or anything like that. I like going, but I didn't know much about the game. Wasn't very experienced, but always kind of had an interest in it. And I think for the average person in America, you kind of think it's the Triple Crown series, and then racing goes away. But as you know, I mean, racing's so much more than that. It's on such a huge level, and I slowly got into it as I got older. My aunt and uncle live out in San Diego, and every summer we'd make a trip out here to visit them, and we'd always find a chance to go to Del Mar. So when I was 15 or 16, I remember coming in and being fascinated. You could put a $2 show bet on a horse and win money. I thought that was amazing. You could pick horse to win third and make a couple bucks as a 16-year-old. And then as I got a little bit older, mid-20s, I just started doing some research and got hooked up with the O'Neill Barn, and Doug and Dennis O'Neill have been a great resource for me, kind of getting involved in the game. They've made it a lot of fun for me, and Paul Radham as well. So those guys kind of got my foot in the door, and, you know, I'm fully immersed myself after that and just try and expose as many people to the game as possible. It's a wonderful game, and lucky to be a part of it, Steve.
Well, and you know, you really have had a lot of fun and are willing to partner up. I mean, you've got literally dozens of different, you know, different groups that you've tied into, you know, including with Nick and Slam Dunk and the Agave team, and you mentioned Paul Redham, and you know, you're willing to chip in, and we're seeing more and more of this, and it's actually a great way to, you know, to basically more or less you know, reduce your risk. But you're doing some breeding too. I mean, you're really all in.
Yeah, I love it, Steve. I mean, there's kind of a season for everything, right? So you're coming up on the yearlings, and you pinhook those or race those, and then you have the mares, and you get excited for your babies to be born in the spring, and you plan the matings, and then you kind of get ready for your two-year-olds at the track, and it's just a full cycle that comes around. But like you mentioned with the partnership, Steve, it's so much more fun winning with your buddies, and, you know, partnerships, if they're not you know, the present right now, they're definitely the future. And I think more and more people are spreading their risk out and partnering up with people. And it's just a lot of fun. I mean, we had such a good time in Saratoga with the whole group. Dave, Kenny, and Saul were there. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun to win with your buddies. And it just makes the game a whole lot more enjoyable. And just every aspect of the game I love, Steve. I think it's a magical game. It's almost like an escape from reality, horse racing. It's a whole other world, and it's a wonderful sport. And I try and, like I mentioned, expose as many people as I can. I have 4 or 5 of my closest high school friends that you know we've known since we were 10 or 12 years old, and they they make it a staple to come out to Del Mar every year now, so they got in last night, and I had to tell them to pump the brakes a little bit, so there was going to be a big day.
Well, you know, you talk about, you mentioned Mr. Redham, and knowing how big of a hockey fan he is, I'm curious who was more excited to meet whom, him meeting you or you meeting him?
Oh, no, I don't think he cared about meeting me. So maybe if you played for the Red Wings,
maybe, that's it.
That. I don't care.
that's good. And, of course, an absolute Red Wing maniac, Paul Redham. And for you, spreading the risk, obviously, I mean, because I don't – how often do we see – I can't even think of the last time I saw – you know, the ERJ Racing as a standalone.
Yeah, I mean, not very often. I have one in today with Andrew Lerner, a Calgary filly that I own by myself. But other than that, I like to spread it out. It's, you know, you don't get creamed that way. It's tough to own it all by yourself, and you can own more horses. And that's just kind of what people are doing now. And with all the great syndicates, like you mentioned previously, and guys like Saul across the country, who like to buy into proven racehorses, it just makes it, I think, a little bit better and easier. I mean, not everyone is a billionaire or a multi-millionaire. So it just, I think it affords people the opportunity that maybe wouldn't be able to get into our game, a chance to. And, like I mentioned, it's partnering up with your friends and your buddies, and it just makes the experience a lot more enjoyable, I think.
You know, and you thinking about you, I mean, aside from having the expendable income as a professional hockey player, I mean, that's part of it. But, you know, you're what, 30, early 30s?
Yeah, 31.
31. And, you know, the fact that, you know, that you know, obviously high profile. And we always say, and the industry is always, you know, looking, you know, to showcase the kinds of people that, you know, that will then draw in, you know, others. And you know, we've used the ambassador concept. The Breeders' Cup does that with athletes and the celebrity chefs and actors and actresses, et cetera. You know, do you sense that you've kindled interest in the game from, you know, from people that otherwise haven't really taken notice? And I know hockey players seem to love horse racing, but I mean, you know, other people that you know, might be fans and just you know, all walks of life generally.
I think so, Steve. I think that's part of our duty as, you know, owners in horse racing. Is I think the sport needs positive exposure, and especially, you know, the way the situation's been going in California right now, it needs that positive influence. And if I'm not doing that, I think I'm doing the game a disservice. And I love horse racing. I mean, I'm not a superstar or anything like that, but, you know, being an athlete, you have connections to other athletes, and, you know, you can try and expose them in different ways possible. I've named a couple horses after my teammates to get them involved, and I think what the Breeders' Cup does is great with the ambassador program. I think it gets people involved across, you know, all platforms, from, like you mentioned, actors, actresses, celebrities, athletes, and everything like that. But as an athlete, I think, you know, the game deserves that exposure, and I try and do some things on social media and, you know, talk to other people about it. But as a, you know, a person with some influence, I think you try and expose people to the game, get them involved. And I mean, if there's an off day during the season, I'm bringing four or five guys to a racetrack if it's nearby in town. So I try and pique some interest in some of my teammates to get involved. And being the old guy on the team now, you know, TVG's out in our lounge all the time.
I love it. That's tremendous. You mentioned the breeding part. We know that you like to bet. I mean, is there one part of the race day and the race experience that, you know, that you particularly enjoy more than another?
I think probably just, I think if you win a race, the feeling when you go to the winner's circle and you get to congratulate your groom and the trainer and the exercise rider. I mean, at Saratoga, Doug or Leander weren't there, unfortunately, but they had their team there, and those guys work so hard. You don't really, they don't get a lot of the limelight, so to kind of congratulate those guys, I think, is a really good feeling. I think those grooms put in a lot of hard hours with the riders and the assistants, so just that feeling to kind of see the excitement on their face after a big race and a big win is a lot of fun. And if you could, that feeling that you get when you see your horse cross the wire first in a big race like that, if you could bottle that up, I mean, that's the feeling everyone's experienced in our game. And, you know, I hadn't wanted Saratoga before, but to kind of have that feeling and bottle it up, I mean, that's what everyone wants. It's an amazing feeling. And just that feeling you get when you, I try and explain it. It's like watching your kid score a, you know, game-winning goal in overtime in one of its first games or something like that. I try to explain to people that don't know horse racing. So you're just so proud of your horse, and you know how much effort it takes to get him there. And it's a magical feeling, and that's probably the feeling that everyone wants when they get into the game.
You know, and I'm going to try to associate, you know, your career and your, you know, your approach to your career and equate it, you know, to wading into ownership and breeding and, you know, the various aspects of, you know, being involved in the sport at a high level, because, you know, fairly famously, you kind of took your time. You could have gone straight to the NHL, and you ended up going to the University of Minnesota, even after being, you know, drafted first, and almost like you felt, you know, you needed, you know, that year, at least that year in college, to, you know, to I suppose provide you with a base. What was your thinking going back to, you know, to the beginning of your career?
Yeah, Steve, I think that's kind of a good point to kind of tie it into horse racing too. I'm not very patient as a person, and in horse racing, it sure teaches you patience, doesn't it? So that was kind of the case when I was 18. I had a chance to turn pro right out of high school or go to college and get the time, put your foundation in, and, you know, get some miles under you, per se. And that's kind of how I liken it to horse racing a little bit. Not every horse is going to be ready to run, you know, as a two-year-old. They might need time. They're an early three-year-old, but you get rewarded for being patient and letting them develop, and that can be kind of the case with athletes too. Every athlete in every sport is battling some type of little nagging injury, or, you know, maybe mentally they're not in the prime at the moment. And I mean, these horses, believable athletes too, and are kind of in the same ballpark. They might not have their best day on a certain day, and you just don't know. And that's kind of how I felt as a young kid. You know, you needed a little bit of time to mature before you take the next step, and it's very similar to horse racing.
How did you, growing up, who did you root for? And of course, the North Stars were gone. I'll really date myself and say the Fighting Saints were long gone.
Really date yourself.
Yeah, they, well, I saw him. We saw him in Hartford with the Whalers and
yep.
Johnny Pye, yep. McKenzie, and they were Bill Butters. They were a nasty bunch. You were a little kid, but the Fighting Saints were tough. That they were well named.
I don't remember them too much, but I mean, like you mentioned, the North Stars were gone in Minnesota at the time, but. I was a big Vancouver Canucks fan. I loved Pavel Bure, the Russian Rocket. He was my favorite player when I was a kid. I was a Gopher fan, so to fulfill that dream and be able to play for them as a kid was awesome. And you know, a kid growing up in Minnesota, you play hockey for the Gophers for any amount of time was you know, basically my lifetime goal at the time. And it was amazing experience.
Well, and you've been a reliable resource for American hockey when it comes to international play, including winning a pair of championships.
Yeah, I mean, I think representing your country is probably the highest honor you can achieve in sport, and you know, a couple World Juniors and things like that, and playing at the Olympics in 2010, and I'm sure you remember that, losing. We lost to Canada in overtime and in the gold medal game. Oh, man, that one still stings. And Redham still gives me crap about it, too, of course. But to have an Olympic silver medal means a lot, and, international play is part of being an athlete and what you strive to achieve for as well. And, lucky to represent my country on different levels, and just blessed to be able to do that, Steve.
I gotta ask about a Stanley Cup and what the opportunity is, and how do you over the second half of your career, and how do you find yourself getting your name engraved on the trophy?
That's what you dream about every day. I mean, that's why you get up and put the hours in every morning in the gym, Steve. And we have three of the best players in the world, Landeskog, Rantanen, and MacKinnon, and I have a couple horses named after them, too, so that doesn't hurt. And I think we're just a team on the up and up, and as an older guy now, I hope I can be around for the next handful of years, because we're gonna be a really good team, and just excited for the future like we are in our Phillies. So lots to look forward to, Steve.
Well, then, in other words, you're going to stick it out and try to bring another cup back to Colorado. And then here again, I'm going to tell you that would have liked to have seen that first cup that they earned. Would have liked to have seen that in the Colisée and see the Nordique. That was a bitter irony. That was unbelievable. I mean, that right after they move, they win one in Colorado, knowing what it would mean in Quebec City, you know, to.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be a heartbreaker for sure.
Too funny. Equate the two sports while we're on the hockey side of things, Eric Johnson with us from the Avalanche, and of course his ERJ Racing endeavors. The sport more and more, and in this era, is certainly a niche sport, and so is professional hockey. It
Definitely.
Has a wild-eyed and rabid following that assures. That just assures its ongoing success, but the appeal seems limited in hockey to some degree in terms of bringing in quote unquote new fans. I suppose you're in tune with how much junior play there is and how much the game is still drawing. Youth hockey participation. That is a feeder, more or less, to help the interest in hockey. But do you sense any lessons to be drawn for racing from the way Gary Bettman and the NHL has been able to sustain itself?
I think a little bit. Just kind of comparing the two sports, I think hockey got in. Kind of a bit of trouble with promoting all the fighting and with the head injuries that kind of came out from it. And I think they did a really good job getting ahead of it and trying to be proactive and assuring that the athletes are taken care of and provided for with the best care possible. And I think, in a way, I think horse racing is trying to do that right now with, of course, the tragic rash of breakdowns that we know have happened. And I think they're doing a They're getting out ahead of it right now, and I think it's a really touchy subject and difficult time, and I think with all the protocols being adapted and how initiative they're being, I think they're trying to show the public how much it means, and it does mean a lot to everybody, that the athlete does come first, and the reason we're here is the horse, and I think they're taking the necessary steps to make sure that those athletes are taken care of better than anything, and the public needs to know that. And I think there's a bad perception of the sport right now, and people really don't understand how well they're taken care of. And I think, in a way, that was how hockey was at one point, too, with all the fighting and the head injuries and everything like that. And I think when you get the public aware of what is actually happening and they see the good in the game, which there's so much good. It's an amazing game, hockey and horse racing. But when you change the perception and you get out there ahead of it, I think it makes a big difference. And I think a lot of people in horse racing are trying to do that right now, and just trying to educate the public about how well horses are taken care of, how hard people work, how many jobs are provided in horse racing. And I think they're doing a great job of that right now, and it's important for the future of our sport. And just to try and compare the two a little bit, I think they're in similar situations at one point. So I think to get the public's point of view changed and see all the good in horse racing and what's going on in our sport, I think is good for the future.
Well put, and kind of the major elements that you're right, that, you know, not just every sport, but every industry will have, you know, moments of indecision and of crisis of one degree or another, and learning from it and you know, going forward. That's the key. And, you know, I think those of us that are closest to it, we all know what the real story is, and trying to get it out versus an avalanche of negativity. And a lot of the negativity comes from within. I mean, we say this all the time, you know, any day, let's say there's 100 horses entered on a race card. You're going to get to the end of the day, and there's going to be, you know, 9 winners and 91 losers. And so, you know, there's always people that are frustrated, and you know, from the horseplay standpoint, you know, the same percentages apply. I mean, there's only a certain percentage that are going to win, and you know, everybody gets frustrated, but. You know, when it comes to answering external criticisms, we need to have a unified voice. I mean, but it's tough to be unified, well, you know, within our own confine, let alone, you know, presenting a unified voice to the, you know, to the outside world, as it were. Give us a couple of horses coming up over the next couple of days to root for and maybe bet on. Give everybody, because you've been known to put some money through the wicket.
Oh yeah, I have to support the neutrals, right? That's horse racing, right? You got to have those big purses. But I like the filly I had with Andrew Luna a little bit today. I want one nice cowbred filly that's trying pretty good, first time out. Andrew's I think an up and coming star in the thoroughbred world as far as training. He's doing an awesome job. I want one today a little bit in the six. I think she's in.
She's in the six.
Boy, he's been working her, and he likes her a lot. And the other filly, Colt, we have a Palace Mouse Colt training really, really well. He'll probably debut at the end of Del Mar, named Call Me Daddy. I didn't name it, but that's the name, Call Me Daddy. and then what's the other horse I like a little bit? We have Convince in today, too, with Doug. I think it's in the third, Turf Sprint. She's 12-1. We're trying grass, I think, for the first time, but she's training really, really well, and she could hit the board at a price, I think. So lots of fun today, Steve. Really excited to be at Del Mar. It's a great time of year, so really looking forward to it.
Well, we hope we're going to get you back for the spin away, although Doug's got the debutante, but there's certainly opportunity with some of your East Coast-based horses, and we hope we're going to see you back at Saratoga before Labor Day.
I'd love that, Steve. Thank you so much for having me on. I listen to the show almost every morning. I get up, grab a coffee, and then go to the rink and listen to you every day. You do a great job and provide great info for the whole thoroughbred community, so we all appreciate it. And it was an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
It's an absolute honor and pleasure for me to have you on. Eric Johnson, everybody. And, of course, Eric, you know, go say hello to him at the track and follow him on Twitter, 6ERIK Johnson, Eric Johnson of the Colorado Avalanche, getting geared up and going to try to hoist a Stanley Cup, and certainly the racing community will love that moment when it comes. Watching Eric skate around. That's one of the great moments in all of sport is the post cup celebration. We had a great Stanley Cup this year, and what a treat it is to have somebody as enthusiastic and just so into the game like this. And Jake Delhomme, of course, from a few years ago from the Panthers, and he actually, his family was in racing, and they're heavily involved. But you think back to Dennis Savard Denny was the last NHLer that we had on the show. What a treat. Eric Johnson, everybody. Bottom of the hour. Let's take a break and we'll come back. Second half, we got a bunch of things to do. Hammer is going to swing by with a little bit of a Del Mar preview. He's not going to head down there. He's actually got some news, and I've hesitated to offer it, but we'll talk about it with him shortly. I mentioned Oscar De La Torre is going to visit with us again. Of course, Oscar coordinated the backstretch media event at Santa Anita. Gary Young and Bill Gallo and Seth Merrow yet here over the next 90 minutes at the races. Stay with us.